just some announcements. Holiday schedule. It's what they call the silly season here in Melbourne, because everything gets very silly because everything shuts down again on December 24th. So next week, December 19, is our Christmas-themed satsang. Then the following week is December 26th, which is Boxing Day. And so it will not be a usual satsang. It'll be what they call a life-sustaining program, which will be some kind of chant and meditation. And then in January, the big news is it's going to be our Golden Jubilee retreat. And that's from January 9th to the 17th. It's celebrating Swamiji's 50th year of discipleship. Wow. 50 years since he met Baba. And of course, this was supposed to be in Ganeshpuri. I think we were all supposed to be heading off to Ganeshpuri in a couple of weeks. But now, I don't think there'd even be a plane to take us there. But we will recreate Ganeshpuri here in Melbourne. And we are here in Ganeshpuri in Melbourne. So we'll be doing that here in Mount Eliza. And you can register that at satsanglive.com.au.
Hello, everyone. It's time for the kids' darshan. Who do we have? Hello, everyone. Up in Byron Bay, or New South Wales, Rafi and Amalia. Hi, Rafi and Amalia. And down on the peninsula, we have Sammy with Mira, and Safira, Patrick, and Mukti, with Chandrika. Let's welcome them. Great. Okay. So, I'd like to begin my programs by quoting Baba, who always began his programs by saying in Hindi, Sabko bade sammane ke saath prem se adhik swagat. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he would always say that that was the essence of spirituality, to welcome another person. And as I was coming out tonight, I was looking at an old magazine from City Yoga, called City Yoga. I just saw this quote on this very topic from one of Baba's talks. He says, I do not belong to any religion. God accepts everyone, and every religion belongs to him. So I also accept all religions and all people. Because I'm a worshiper of God, I'm a worshiper of humanity. If there's no humanity, then there's no God. Before I start my lectures, I always bow my head and say what I just said. I welcome you all with all my heart, with great respect and love. I do not do this to please people or to flatter them, but with the awareness that God dwells in every human being. I have complete confidence in this, not because I have blind faith, but because it is my direct experience. After meditating for a long time and putting forth a great deal of effort, I experienced him within me through the grace of my guru. You too, when you attain God, will discover him in your heart. Once you perceive him within, you will also see him in everyone else, and then you'll understand why the true religion is to welcome another human being. That's from Baba. No one wrote as beautifully as Baba. Always gave meaning to the term humanism, and along with divinism. So, so tonight, special program. It's called Notes from the Tea Shop. Originally, Notes from the Tea Shop was the name of a column that I wrote in the old Siddhapath magazine, And the tea shop referred to was next door to the ashram in Ganesh Puri, where we would go for a healing cup of tea, some chai, and some relief from the intensity of the ashram, and for some philosophical moments. And so I called the column I wrote Notes from the Tea Shop. And the first part of it is Devima will read from one of those old columns, a question people would write into the Siddha Path, and I would answer questions. So this is from an ancient Notes from the Tea Shop.
Question. These are questions to you, right?
Yeah, questions these to me.
Questions to Swamiji. Question. What is the difference?
You should know. You were the managing the editor.
I don't remember.
She ran the whole magazine.
What is the difference between devotion and attachment? Swamiji answers. Devotion is love that has been purified of all attachment. During the course of their relationship with the Guru, people sometimes get attached to Baba. Their devotion is colored by attachment. When this happens, it isn't so bad because during their sadhana, Baba purifies that attached devotion. We give him our limited love, and he purifies it. We come to him with all our ideas of attached personal love. We want something from him. We want some acknowledgement. We want something back. We want him to behave in a certain way towards us. This is attached love. Rather than simply loving a thing for itself and letting it be, we add all kinds of conditions and strings. We may not actually present a contract to Baba for him to sign, but we will still put such conditions on our love as, Baba, I'll love you if you behave this way towards me and give me a hat every week. Baba simply dances out of that kind of attachment. Devotion with attachment to the Guru is ultimately purified. Within this one relationship with the Guru, all our other relationships are purified. All our attached relationships are a bargain or a contract. Now let's discuss. I really want to discuss our relationship. Now, I'm not very pleased. Now let's work out our contract. You do the dishes and I'll do the cooking. And if that person doesn't do what we expect them to do, we're mad at them. We make ourselves miserable. Real love isn't like that. Real love accepts the other person, no matter what they do. Even if Baba corrects us in the course of our sadhana, there is still an acceptance behind that. It is not a correction that comes out of a personal hurt or a personal motive. It is to point us toward the highest truth. Real devotion is pure love for the self. In the Upanishads, a great teacher said, it is not for the sake of the wife that the wife is loved, but for the sake of the self. It is not for the sake of the husband that the husband is loved, but for the sake of the self. It is not for the sake of anything that anything is loved, but for the sake of the self. This is the way Baba loves. He loves every person for the sake of the self. At first, this seems a little weird to us because we are used to loving individuals, individual characteristics, and individual relationships. Baba raises us up above and beyond such limited love. This teaching is sometimes a little painful in practice because we are attached in so many ways. This is the nature of the guru-disciple relationship, to teach us to love in the highest way. Only when we love from without conditions are we free from the pain of our love. Whenever our love is attached, it has the seeds of pain in it because such love always changes. It is subject to loss and decay. When we love the self, we freely love. That which is eternal, such love can never end, can never be hurt, shaken, or broken.
That sound like me or not? Huh? A young me. I don't know. Anyway, notes in the tea shop. So We have a photo? Yes. There we are in the tea shop. That's the actual shot of the tea shop, although it may have been photoshopped. So these are some notes from the tea shop. Sometimes I would discover them under the rock in the ashram, and sometimes at night, you know, I'd wake up and there on a pad on my table in an ancient hand would be written these enigmatic statements. And so here are some notes from the tea shop. One of them reminded me of something that Yogi Shri said. Let me see if I can find that one. No. Wait a second. Ah, yes. This one reminded me of what he was saying. Okay, they have little titles and they're enigmatic remarks. Okay, so this says, two tasks of the sages. Two tasks. Number one, to elevate the disciple to the other reality, to show us that other reality that Yogi Shri was talking about. And this is the realm of the G statement, the great spiritual statement that says, I am the self, I am that, aham brahmasmi. And the other goal, the other task of the guru is to free the disciple from mundane reality. So it's a two-pronged attack. In other words, to handle what's called in the scriptures raga and dvesha, attachment and aversion. See, we live in this world and we love some things and we hate some things. And because of that loving and hating some things, we're bound. There's nothing else that binds us but that emotional attachment and aversion. And also to free us from glani or lassitude, or we could say depression. And so these are the tasks of the sages. And that's also that's what sadhana is about, those two factors. One is connecting to the highest truth, and the other is to getting rid of attachments and blocks and so on. Okay, here we go. Ready? This one's called Metta Shaivism. And it's based on the idea that everything is Shiva. Na Shivam Vidyate Kvachit, what one of the scriptures says, there is nothing that is not Shiva. There is nothing that is not Shiva, nothing that is not consciousness, nothing that is not God. There's not a place where empty of God. So you are also God, you're also Shiva, and just as you are, you're Shiva. So the first thing, part of this says, I have fear and desire, and also I'm Shiva. So let's contemplate this, let's do this dharana. If you have fear, I'm fearful Shiva. If you have desire, I'm desiring Shiva. If you're jealous, I'm jealous Shiva. You're the Shiva in that form. I'm petty and wretched, I'm the petty wretched Shiva. I'm depressed, I'm the depressed Shiva. It's only Shiva who can show up in these terms. So this is called a metta-G statement. Whatever you are is Shiva in that form. When you look at it that way, you don't have to do anything except know that you're Shiva in that form. You can be depressed. We wouldn't want to take that away from you. You can be outraged, jealous, and so on. But you're Shiva in that form. So go inside, whatever is there right now, whatever you find in your inner world, you may be smarting over something that happened today. You may be whatever. I am Shiva in this form. is called self-acceptance. Okay, next one. Ready? You like that one? This is related to saying A statements and G statements to yourself all day long. First point, all through the day you can make A statements silently. You don't have to call them out. That's quite obnoxious, actually. It's nothing more than self-observation and checking in. I'm upset, I'm nervous, I'm angry, I'm whatever it is. I'm relaxed, I'm happy. At the same time, but when you make an A statement, you know, an A statement's only a partial truth. It's the sort of the mundane or the lower truth in a way. So always add a G statement to that A statement.
You have to explain these online.
Ah, I didn't welcome everyone in Radioland.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. It's because some of you have come through the mysterious portal from Radioland and are manifesting here. And there are quite a few people who I haven't seen in months who are suddenly here, and it's quite daunting. I have performance anxiety. No, it's actually, I'm overwhelmed with the joy of seeing everyone. And as Yogi Shri was saying, that they've done such a good job in Victoria, the state that we're in, that there's been no new cases of coronavirus for 40 days. Because of that, gradually restrictions are loosened, and I feel somewhat guilty to be too happy about it, because I'm very aware that this is not the case in places where people in Radioland are, and other countries, and that it's a dire battle going on. But it shows you that through discipline and through intelligence and through cooperation, you can make progress against this disease. So, and because of that, people are starting to come back. A, B, and G statement. So an A statement is simply a statement of present feeling. I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm happy, I'm intoxicated with joy. That's it.
I'm scared.
I'm scared, I said that already.
Did you?
Yes. So, a G statement is a statement that connects you to the higher realm, to God, you could say, or to the self, to consciousness. And that's the rest of the story, as they say. Affirmations are B or G statements without regard for A statements. It's not good enough to do one without the other. If you just make G statements without paying attention to this realm, it's kind of hollow. It's kind of a denial. And if you just make A statements without elevating them, that's too personal and too limited. So it's recommending going to both at the same time. Here's another one. This one's called grace. First point, the five processes. Grace is the fifth process. This is from Kashmir Shaivism. And they say that God does five things. Creation, he creates things, he sustains things, and he destroys things. Those are three of the processes. And you know, you have the Hindu trinity of Brahma the creator and Vishnu the sustainer, Shiva the destroyer. That represents those three functions, but there are two others which are the most interesting ones. The fourth one is called concealment. Another word for that is maya, or ignorance, that God conceals his own nature and creates all this confusion. We've had a lot of concealment this year. This is the year of concealment. But at the end of concealment comes grace. And grace moves in the other direction, away from separation, away from the darkness, into the light, into oneness, into away from depression and anxiety to peace and love and contentment. And they say the guru is the grace-bestowing power of God. He's a grace specialist. That's what the guru is about. He's a conductor of the fifth process. Third point, yoga is all about grace, the bundle of grace. This fifth process, and everybody in the world knows about it because we're all looking for it. When we get a promotion, we feel an upwelling. That's grace. When we fall in love, we feel an upwelling. And that's grace. We get a high mark. That's grace. When we feel healthy, there's an upwelling. That's all of these things are grace. Even a good meal or going to a good concert, all these are examples of grace. And so we look for them and look for them. But they're behind all these individual graces, there's a principle of grace. The principle of grace in the universe. And that's what yoga is about. And to attain that, we need three things. The Buddha, what did the Buddha say? What three things did you need? The Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And on our terms, it means the Buddha means the guru. The Dharma means the practice and the method. And the Sangha is the satsang, other seekers and meaning. So the real point of what we do is grace, how to attain it, how to hold it, and how to get rid of the movements that take us away from it. Okay. Okay, let's do a little dharana or meditation before we go to a heavy philosophical one. Are you ready for a heavy philosophical one? Huh? Possibly controversial? But we won't do that right now. Now this is called the Be Loose Meditation. Okay, so go inside. Relax every contraction in the body. Check out your navel, your heart, throat, third eye. Wherever there's a contraction, a tension, let it go. Whatever tension you're holding. Don't question what the tension's about. Just let it go. Be loose. Relax. You can have the idea that you're relaxing into the divine. Relax into the divine. Whatever tensions you're carrying, you carry them in your jaw, in your stomach, in your back, in your neck. Just relax. Okay, I have to stop that before we go into meditation. That's a good one, isn't it? You like that? Okay, this is a small contemplation on universal consciousness. And it may be confronting the Buddhist conception. So it's about whether the universal consciousness has an I sense or not. The Buddhists say universal consciousness has no I sense. Kashmir Shaivism says it has a hum vimarsha, it has the I sense, I am Shiva. It's a very big gap. The Shaivite model, universal consciousness has I consciousness. The Shaivite model says universal consciousness has I consciousness, but that we misdirect it. We think it refers to this body. and this person. That's called ego. But it's the same I sense. The I that you feel, the I that you feel is Shiva's I. Think about that. That's very far out. The I, of course, everybody feels I. But then you think I refers to this jiva, this person, this limited person, and you're worried about whether this limited person is getting enough or being misunderstood or, you know, whatever, failing, succeeding, people like you, all these things. We worry about that. But what the Shaivite sages say is that the I that we have really is Shivoham, I am Shiva. It's the same I, not a different I, the same I. But we're not going into that. This is about whether universal consciousness has an I. This is a bit of theology, I think you might call it. So if you're a Buddhist out there in radio land, you can write me an angry email. But I'd rather, instead of writing me an angry email, you can just argue with me. Just write your answer to this. So let's suppose that universal consciousness does not have I consciousness. In this view, it's just kind of expanded awareness with no identification. No identification. What do they call it now? Non-binary. It's not, it's no feeling of I-ness. So it has no identification. But then observe in the world, you look around the world, and you discover that all living beings have I-consciousness. Everybody you know has an ego, and even animals have an I-consciousness. You know that if you've got a pet, they've got I consciousness. So the I sense is pretty universal. So where did it come about? If the universal consciousness didn't have I sense, where did the I sense happen? It must have been in the step down from universal consciousness to personal consciousness, right? But then it wouldn't be 100%, would it? If it was there, it hints that it probably belongs to the highest. It's in the father. It's in the mother. It's in the source. You follow what I'm just saying? That thing that's universally in the lower expression has to have its origins in the source. So in some sense, there has to be an I sense in the universal consciousness. Are you convinced? Or have I lost you? No? Well, convinces me. When I saw that in the ancient hand on my writing table, I experienced that. All right, moving right along. Anybody want to comment on that? Okay, I'll let it go. Here's another one. This is an interesting bit of self-observation. The emotion of second force. Do I have to explain second force, David Ma?
Probably.
I fully intended to. Okay, so it's Gurdjieff who talked about the three forces, and we talk about it in the ashram a lot this way. First force is when you want to do something. And second force is the obstacle that happens. You know what I'm talking about? Ever have an obstacle in your life? Ever? That's second force. It's a given. Whenever there's a movement to do something, there's always something to be overcome. Something to be overcome, that's second force. Now, when you live in this world, it's called the yoga bhumi, this world, precisely because you have to deal with second force. In the physical world itself is pure second force. it's hard to get around this physical world. You know, I like to say if you want to build a house, it takes you a year to build a house, plus money, plus all kinds of things. It's very hard to navigate in this world. So second force arises, and in a way you could say one of the real spiritual tests is how we deal with second force that arises in our life. Just today, second force arose in all of your lives, I'm sure of it. And so how did you deal with it? So here's the question. How do you react to second force? What is your characteristic reaction when second force arises in your life, when blockage, an obstacle, arises in your life? For example, does anger come up? Some people, when they block, they get angry. Some people, when they get blocked, they get terrified. They get fearful. Some people, when they get blocked, they feel defeated. And if there's any resistance, they just take to their bed. They can't do anything. So I'm asking you that when the inevitable second force, what negative emotion comes up? And that turns out that'll be what one of the things you have to overcome in this life, is to overcome that tendency. Like when some people say you feel despair every time there's a block. So what are you going to do about that? You have to pay less attention to the despair. You don't let the despair run you. And you continue to go forward anyway, despite that feeling that comes up. Anger comes up, you don't act on that anger. You do something about that. And so this is what you have to deal with. So it's a good meditation. Okay, let's see. Did I do all of these? Oh yes, I did. What did I do on page one? Let me see. Yeah. Okay, I have one more, and then a few meditations. You still with me? What?
They're all in a trance.
In a trance? Which one put you in a trance? So this one, I'm going to skip that one. I'm just going to go right to the meditations. I've got tons of them. Just suffice it to say that if I were to put a book out of them, I could do one for each day of a year. There's that many of them. Okay, so these are four dharanas, or short meditations. And we'll do each one of these, and then we'll go from that into our meditation. Okay, so the first one is called the breath dharana. Dharana is, in our language, a dharana means a pointed meditation. It might only be a couple of minutes or a couple of seconds long, but you point towards it and then you focus on it and then you experience what it gives you. Okay, so this dharana is focus on the breath and place yourself inside the breath. Let's do that. You're inside the breath. Do that meditation for a few seconds. Okay, let's stop for a minute. How many found that meaningful? Did that mean something to you? Okay. It's okay. If it didn't mean anything to you, ignore it. There are lots more where that came from. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. You're a bad person for other reasons. It's a very good one, actually, if you're a breath yogi. Okay, next one, mantra. It's a very simple thing. Connect with the sound current. Now, if you listen carefully, there's a flow of sound. Scripture talks that sound in itself. So you can hear my voice, and you hear all kinds of indeterminate sounds. You can hear traffic sounds and so on. The wind howling, right? What else do you hear?
Crickets.
Crickets, yeah. So, but just hear sound itself. It means it takes all these individual forms, but there's always sound. There's a sound current. So connect with it. Ride the sound current for a moment, if that's meaningful. Okay, like that one? How many found that meaningful? Okay, third one. This is called be open to the guru. And this is simple, just stay in the space of openness to the guru. Open yourself to grace, in other words. And again, some of these will be more meaningful than others, and some may not be at all, and you can just let them go by. The thing about spiritual teachings is not the ones that don't work for you, they're not interesting, but the ones that work for you, hold on to them like a treasure. That's why there are so many in diverse spiritual teachings, because we're not all constructed alike. If one doesn't work, it doesn't matter. Find the one that works. Stay in the space of openness to the guru. And finally, we'll begin meditate. We're going to meditate now for 10 minutes. And you can meditate any way you like, but I want you to meditate at the beginning with this dharana. Okay? This is a very good one. This is a really, really good one. We'll meditate for 10 minutes. And the dharana is, look inside, look at your inner world, and just contemplate, I love my inner world. I love my inner world. I love it. Sometimes we get alienated from our inner world. Sometimes there's self-hatred. I love my inner world. Contemplate that, and then we'll go off and meditate I meditate for 10 minutes. Once again, with great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. Satgurunar and Ki Jai. I love my inner world.
Hi, everyone. If you enjoyed this podcast, why not check out Swamiji's latest book, Ganesh Pridays, Memoirs of a Western Yogi. It's about the time he spent in India with his guru, Baba Muktananda, in the 1970s, and it's a great read. To get a copy, go to ganeshpridays.com. That's ganeshpuri, days.com. Wherever you are in the world, you can get the book on Kindle or printed in your own country.